Welcome to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg discusses the latest trends in finance and accounting with a global audience via LinkedIn audio. Recorded live, anyone can tune in and take part. Just raise your hand and share the stage. Will you join Anders next time? For now, kick back, relax, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hashtag Finance Master show. And we have a guest today, Jan-Philipp Menke from Jedox. JP for short, do you want to just give a quick intro of yourself?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Anders. My name is Jan-Philipp or JP. I'm with Jedox since the beginning of last year, and I have more than 20 years of experience in the EPM space, going through actually being at the university at the chair of controlling and Deloitte consulting, and then two large vendors. And now I'm representing Jedox with the job role value architect. So the idea is to enhance the value of applications in planning, forecasting, and everything around BI.
Thanks a lot for the intro, JP. We'll get back to you with questions along the way in today's show. Today's show is called Planning in a Volatile World. And we'll talk about planning inside of companies, and we'll be basing it on the article released yesterday called CFO, How Are You Planning for Success? And today's show is sponsored by Jedox. And in the article from yesterday, you can find a link to an ebook that we have co-published together with Jedox called the Planning and Forecasting Blueprint, in which we unveil 10 principles for doing planning differently. And hopefully you can use that to start transforming your process. And there's a lot of other great resources available from Jedox to do that. But let's get into it. What a ride the last few years have been. One unexpected event after the other. There's so much volatility that we've given up on the label normal. We can call it the next normal, as McKinsey does. However, when the situation changes so fast, do we even experience it as normal anymore? Question mark. Well, enough with the philosophical questions. This is the reality in which CFOs need to do company planning and forecast the future. CEOs need this and are willing to accept best guesses and reprioritization whenever necessary. However, it has proven challenging for CFOs to accept the new reality. The mantra is, if we cannot forecast the future with reasonable certainty, we won't release a forecast. There are also challenges once the forecast is released and reality happens. Many finance teams measure, for instance, forecast accuracy and punish people for not hitting the target or the forecast. We need to move on from these old dogmas and institute new planning and success criteria. That's why we made financial planning a top 10 priority for CFOs in 2024. Today's show will focus on tangible shifts that CFOs should make to their planning process. And on that note, JP, perhaps, because you speak to a lot of clients as well, do you still experience this mindset of wanting to be quite accurate and certain about the numbers with the finance teams that you work with?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is, as you said, part of the mindset, and it's only slowly changing. And one of the aspects, for example, where I, although it's not the major topic today, but one of the things where they try to cope with this situation is using AI as the silver bullet for everything. And this is one of the things why I think it's important to have these discussions as today, that it's not just about AI, it's about what you can change in your mindset and the processes that follow, actually.
No, 100% and fully agree, JP. AI as a very general term, of course, you can use that as a silver bullet for anything, but what does it practically mean, right? How is it practically going to change things that you do? And I think on that note, how do you then gauge kind of the appetite for shifting to different approaches, whether that's AI-based or something else? Is the appetite increasing out there, or what do you see?
Yeah, absolutely. It's really one of the things we are seeing is that at all driving decision much more fact-based, much more data-driven is something that is increasing in pace. And one of the aspects that comes from a more process planning point of view is really this much tighter integration of the different plans within an organization, really starting and ending with the strategic planning and linking, tying this into the execution.
Yeah, so it's on the notion of integrated business planning, right? That it's not just a financial plan, it's actually a full company plan that we need to ensure actually can be translated into something on the ground. Great. We'll get back to you a bit later, JP. We'll just talk a little bit about what are some of the shifts that we think that CFO should make. And we'll specifically talk about eight shifts. We have previously discussed in this series here in the 10 priorities of CFOs around how CFOs could exercise more strategic leadership. We highlighted 10 strategic value drivers that determine a company's success. And we pointed to McKinsey's research, which shows that a company needs to make two or three of these so-called big moves to create more value relative to competitors. So it only seemed fitting that we return to McKinsey's view on what changes we should introduce into our strategy and planning process to enable these big moves. And here McKinsey has highlighted 8 significant shifts it wants senior management to implement. However, the CFOs should take the lead on this work, even though McKinsey mentions nothing of the CFO in that book called Strategy Beyond the Hockey Stick. The simple reason is that it's all about planning and resource allocation, and that certainly falls under the CFO's remit. So let's highlight the 8 shifts and then discuss in more details how to make it happen. The first is strategy is a journey. Obviously, reality doesn't change in a set rhythm, and we need to be prepared to discuss the strategy whenever it's relevant. The second one is on real alternatives. A plan with no alternatives is rarely a good plan. Hence, any recommendation you make for making choices, strategic as they may be, should include a discussion of the real alternatives. Number 3 is 1 in 10 wins. Too often, corporate resources must be spread more thin across too many initiatives. Instead, we should identify breakout business opportunities and bet big on them. Number 4 is, along the same lines, big moves. You can only create more value if you make bigger moves than your competition. It takes 2 or 3 of these big moves to move up the power curve of value creation, which is also introduced by McKinsey. Number 5 is liquid resources. If you can allocate all your resources in your budget or your plan, you will not be able to maneuver when reality changes. Ensure you have at least 20% liquid resources to seize the moment when it arrives or defend against the different risks that you may occur. Number 6 is open risk portfolios. Instead of sandbagging targets, executives should be ambitious and present their best plans. This gives them the option to discuss risks in the portfolio more openly. Number 7, holistic view. Create an unbalanced scorecard, including hardcore financials and big strategic moves with an outlined probability of success. And finally, number 8, forcing the first step. Break your big moves into 6 to 12 months increments, making it tangible what needs to be achieved when, and giving a chance to test the strategy in the first 6 months. We'll deep dive more on these. So how to make strategy as a journey happen? Most companies make 5-year strategic plans, which makes sense if you can adjust the course when needed. Doing this is what we described in How CFOs Can Manage the Next Normal. Here's a quick summary. Number 1, when making choices, be sure to document your assumptions. Number 2, establish confidence interval for your assumptions. Number 3, track your assumptions in real time. And number 4, trigger a strategy action session whenever reality reaches your confidence interval. Simple, practical approach. Number 2 are real alternatives. Strategizing is about making choices. That means you need to have something to choose between. CFOs should up their game regarding what they bring to the table. Only make a recommendation by suggesting 2 good alternatives that should be able to solve the issue independently. Of course, you need to balance the pros and cons without favoring your recommendation to any extreme. This will ensure a higher quality strategic discussion and lead to better choices. On 1 in 10 wins, we could say, bet big or go home. Could that even be a new CFO mantra? Question mark. It's easier said than done, of course, since resources are usually tied up in business. At the same time, there's politics where business leaders all want their prestige project. To move on from this, CFOs should review their current investment and project plans and ask project managers if each project has the ideal amount of resources for success. If not, carefully assess which initiatives will likely provide the most significant benefits, even if they all have the needed resources. You can also evaluate which will likely yield the highest ROI. Go big on these and be bold to scrap the rest. On the big moves, you can make big moves through M&A, resource allocation, capital expenditure, productivity improvements, and differentiation improvements. Each of these options should be crystallized from a specific company standpoint. Evaluate the list of potential big moves and decide which suits your business and current situation best. Create projections and a business case for each move and present them to senior management for decision making. The decision shouldn't be made lightly, of course, as this will be a defining move for any CEO's tenure. On the liquid resources, most companies have a large part of their resources tied up in existing business and future capital expenditures. This leaves them with little flexibility to seize the moment when opportunity comes knocking. CFOs must mandate that a plan to free as much as 20% of total company resources can always be executed. To get started, review how much of your budget is currently tied up in fixed spend, and if more than 80%, create a plan to free up resources. That brings you to the more exciting part, where you can scan the current business landscape for attractive new opportunities. Better opportunities than your current projects are available, you can free up the resources and take advantage of the situation. On the open risk portfolios, there needs to be much more open about risk-taking in companies. Too much sandbagging is happening today and unnecessarily ties up many resources. It's better to ask exactly for what's needed and then highlight the risk associated with gratitude turning out differently. To assess how you currently take risks, reflect with your stakeholders on how you created your current strategy or plan and attach a probability score to each initiative in your plan. If the plans are safer than P50, reevaluate what you could deliver in the P50 scenario and present your plan to senior management for review. On the holistic review, all spoils go to the victor, right? It certainly feels like that in many companies. Those who meet or beat the budget are the true heroes. What if the one that always beats the budget also sets the most conservative targets, though? What if the one that typically underperforms the budget creates more value than the conservative one who beat the budget? We're not saying it's always like that, but it's a real risk. And that's why CFOs should take a more holistic view of performance. Reflect on how you're currently evaluating performance. Do you reward conservatism and risk-taking equally? If both, successfully. Use the open risk portfolio to reassess the performance of business leaders. And finally, before we turn back to JP to hear some of his thoughts, it's about forging the first step. Planning is half the journey, has been said. However, there's no journey if the first step is not taken. There's a risk when doing five-year planning, the first fundamental steps are not taken, that the business as usual continues. That's why CFOs should enforce that first steps are taken. Here's how to do it. Review your current strategy or plan to assess how it's broken down into tangible steps. Are there 6 months milestones? Are the 6 months milestones broken down into more concrete steps for execution? If the answer to both questions is yes, consider how you follow up on these and what feedback loop you're running. What's critical is to know as soon as possible if the first steps land where you would expect them to. Planning goes way beyond the numbers, but often it's unfortunately what it's being reduced to in companies worldwide. It's not easy for CFOs to change decades of doing things in a certain way. However, our volatile world calls for different actions. At least that's our statement. But JP, do you find it realistic for companies to make at least some of these shifts? Or have you seen some of these shifts already happened out there?
Yeah, I think especially, as I already said in the beginning, with the strategic options and managing more strategically and including not only the strategic definition of what you want to achieve, but also the ability to track the execution. That's quite closely linked to what you're saying. And if I take, for example, the first four topics, strategy as a journey, real alternatives, and the bets you have to take and the big moves you have to make, if you combine all this, it's quite often what we see as, for example, investment and CapEx or even M&A planning as part of the strategic initiative planning process. So defining a strategic direction, not only as a direct clear road, but as alternatives. So scenario planning, basically. And scenario planning in itself is not really new. What's new is that we have the capability to define this in a much more granular way and link it to execution. What does it mean? For example, if I want to grow in a specific region, it's obvious that part of this has to be some kind of resource allocation that's linked to this. And at the same time, not only meaning CapEx, for example, but also HR and today skill growth as well, for example. And tying all those different topics into just one set of alternatives I can judge on and then derive different scenarios based on best, worst case, and then being able to have this corridor. And exactly as you said, if you then focus, and that's one of the things I see, if you start with this structured CapEx and investment planning, that all this, hey, the loudest voice wins, starts to go away when you are more fact-based. And this actually helps if you put those large stones in the plan, it helps for the smaller stones to fall into place. And this is actually what with the liquid resources you describe, is something that's more natural to be allocated right, rather than just taking the next big stone and then you have no liquidity and no flexibility left. So it's this combination that then helps really going into linking execution at operational level as well. That's linking to this open risks portfolio. When I saw this and we had, when you presented this idea to me, it actually resonated directly with consensus planning within S&OP, where you align different views within the organization, the financial view, which, for example, the production and marketing and other views as well. And you have to be honest. You have to be risk sensitive, sharing this kind of information and even make this risks positive and negative part of this equation of consensus planning. And that's actually what helps creating a more holistic view with winners on all sides than just only those that budgeted the way they think it's politically correct, let's say.
Great. I really like how you took us through all the steps here from your point of view, JP, as well. I think that adds definitely a lot of value. If you were to say, if it's not possible at all, which of these shifts or one of them do you think is the most critical one to make for companies today?
Most critical and most difficult is obviously sharing information. It's still, for a lot of people, hiding information is power or influence, let's say. And I think in an information society where we live in today, more and more people have to understand that sharing information is more valuable than hiding it.
Yeah.
So all the topics linked to being more transparent are critical to me.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, right? If you want to make more fact and data-based decisions, if you want to make sure that you're making those right strategic choices as much as you can, right? Of course, it's always making decisions under uncertainty. Then everyone needs to put their cards on the table. And if that means as a business unit manager that I quote unquote lose and I don't get any funding for my projects, then so be it. But if I'm overall rewarded on how the overall company is performing, I should have an easier time putting myself behind that and actually seeing it as a positive. Where, as you say, perhaps people still today play too many games and hiding information so that maybe they can get the resources and get to do what they would maybe consider the fun stuff. But honestly speaking, the fun stuff is the company being successful, right? I guess that's why we're all there. We'll get back with some final questions for JP in just a little bit. And of course, if anyone in the audience have any questions, it's a good time to think about them, reflect on them, and then raise your hand in just a moment and we can bring you up on stage. But just for planning and for strategy, needing to take the first step, we also need to take the first step to realize some of these 8 shifts here. The good news is that many of these shifts are within our control. So here are some questions to consider addressing on how to make each of these shifts. How often are you reviewing your strategic progress and how easy is it for you to change course? How often are alternatives considered when deciding between strategic and tactical actions? Consider not only what happens in finance, but also what business leaders do. Have you made some tough prioritization when allocating resources or killed any initiatives lately? Are you already making any big moves or are you starting from scratch? This will definitely help you with your next steps. How many resources do you have in your war chest? Here you can also consider untapped bank facilities, among others. Do you know the risk profile of your current strategy and other tactical initiatives? How are you rewarding business leaders with performance? And after listening to today's show or reading the blog, if you've also done that, just reflect briefly and perhaps come to the stage here or post some comments on the event page about what's your first step. I used to work at Maersk for many years. And I saw some of these shifts happening, but also from a strategic perspective. So Instead of, for instance, doing a big M&A transaction once every 3 or 4 years, Maersk shifted into doing smaller transactions, but doing many of them, increasing their integration capabilities, ensuring that they can realize the value from the transactions that they do. They also made a shift on differentiation in their ocean or container business. Everything seemed commoditized. So they tried to find ways of differentiating their product so that they could increase prices or get more volume. So those were two big moves that they very explicitly made. And being in finance at the time, we were there to support them, making it happen. But we, of course, recognize that making these shifts will be challenging. You don't need to make all of them at once either. Perhaps make a stage plan where you address your most significant gaps first and close the rest later. We're pretty sure, though, that most companies struggle with this. Hence, you are quickly securing a competitive advantage by making these shifts. Do you think it's feasible to plan these things for your company, to plan differently? How would any of these shifts change the game for you? We firmly believe that changing the process will drive significant value creation and give you a much needed leg up versus the competition. It's time to force the first step on changing our planning process. Maybe, JP, you can speak a little bit about how are you actually helping companies do better planning. I'm sure that's something you spend a lot of time on as well.
Yeah, the obvious first step might be to go beyond Excel, let's say, and try to link your data, your processes, and your people, and be able to really use the data you already have much more consistently. And that will help you with any of the topics, having a more collaborative approach. And with regard to this six months period, that's actually exactly when we are guiding new customers to what they should be doing to be successful. We always state the first results have to be already visible in a first process within the first 6 months. Maybe even if it's a smaller process taken and prioritized, maybe already within 3 months, but really live and already proving value. Because that's, for me, the most important thing, that you get commitment to what you are doing. And that's only possible if people see the results already.
No, absolutely. I think that's really great food for thought there, JP. We have Alexander up on stage. Alexander, feel free to unmute yourself and share your perspective or ask any questions you may have.
Hello, Alexander Leshov. I'm from Novartis. Question, when you're talking about the process, you're talking about the planning financial process or you're talking about the business process?
I think we see it more broadly. JP, you also talk about the integrated business planning, right? But maybe you can also put it in a bit more context of the broader planning here.
Planning is always part of forecasting. Those are always parts of larger processes. Nevertheless, they are the ones setting the scene, and then you have to deliver on them. You can't change the planning and forecasting processes because they are part of the mindset if you do not understand the business processes. Nevertheless, that's where the CFO has the most impact in terms of being able to influence. And one, I remember the Nordic CFO of Volvo, was it the UK one? I'm not sure. He said, actually, one of the beauty of using, for example, driver-based logics is that you can drive the organization outside of finance, outside of his.
Okay. So I'm understanding you correctly. Basically, you're talking about planning process, but affecting the business process through your value drivers.
Exactly. That, as for example, Anders mentioned, if you are changing gears with M&A, this will drastically affect all the processes, including HR, including maybe your supply chain, and everything, basically.
No, this is I'm asking this one, because currently I'm looking at the process mining. It's a bit different technology, which is affecting the business processes, yes? Not only the financial planning process and what we know, what exactly we do and how we do, and how we can optimize the business process in order to deliver financial value. Okay, understood. And I have another question. I think maybe it's a bit related to this McKinsey recommendation. I see some paradox when we said that we need to make these three big moves, and then we need risk. Yeah? And then the question is, sometimes one of these moves, it's about the transformation, yes, about restructuring. And when we do this restructuring, actually, we create a lot of anxiety inside of the organization. And I think people are really afraid to take risk after that. Yes, so they're becoming quite protective. And maybe it's another topic what we discuss as well. It's about the data, if they share data or not share data. So clearly they are not motivated to share data. I don't know if you can provide any recommendation how to overcome this obstacle and to make an organization aligned behind the strategic goals and to move forward.
I can share my perspective with JP, feel free to add as well. I think there's a huge deficit of change management capabilities in companies today. When we do these big transformations, there's always like a change management office, but it's just a few people at a corporate level trying to send out some templates and whatnot. But the ability to lead and drive change is just not very present in most companies. And of course, then people get concerned, uncertain about what's going on. And I maybe, as we said, maybe they're not willing to share information. So for me, it's really about increasing the change management capability inside companies. But that's probably more a soft action. I don't know, JP, if there's any more hardcore actions we can also take.
Yeah, actually, this question refers more back to my M&A and business process management past. Fully with Anna's part is definitely change management. And the critical part about change management is restructuring and change at all is only critical if people do not understand the target picture. And that's something which I see company leaders struggling sometimes with, is not showing a consistent picture of the target they try to achieve and breaking this really down to specific areas that will be restructured, and at best breaking this down even to an individual level.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Alexander, for coming up on stage, asking really great questions here. We truly appreciate that. We are 2 minutes over time, so I think we will move towards closing the show. So JP, thanks a lot for being with us today and sharing what you're hearing out there from customers and your own experience as well, of course. Alexander, thanks a lot for coming up on stage. We truly appreciate that. And thanks to the hundreds of people listening in for a short while or for a long time. We truly appreciate all of you here as well. And we hope you will be with us also next week when we go live on LinkedIn with a video and everything else. It's going to be a new, different experience, but we're really excited about that. And JP is going to be there too next week. So I hope you're excited too, JP.
Absolutely.
Great. And also thanks a lot to Jedox for sponsoring today's show. We truly appreciate your support. So with that, wishing everyone a great day ahead or great weekend ahead if you're already at that time. And I really hope to see you again next week. Bye for now, everyone.
You've been listening to Hashtag Finance Master, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on the latest trends in finance and accounting. And why not join Anders every Thursday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?